right, guys, welcome to episode number 2 of the Flight Test After Hours podcast. Somehow we made it through one, and we're going to try number 2 and see what happens. Hey, we appreciate all your support. Now, if you have any questions or anything, hit us up on Twitter at FT After Hours. Shoot me an email at chris@flighttest.com. You can email Wayne at wayne@flighttest.com. And I'm sure you know how to get a hold of Alex, and because since, what is it you do? Product support, right, Alex?
Yeah, as of right now, I'm doing all the customer support. And that happened pretty much when one day I just started answering the phone, and I haven't stopped since. So as of right now, if you contact us via phone or through the store or through flighttest.com on the contact page, yeah, I'll more than likely be the one responding to you.
So in other words, guys, unless it's really important, don't bother Alex too much. I'm just kidding.
No, I love to hear from you guys.
All right. And we got the usual subjects here today. We got you just heard from Alex. And then our other one over there is Wayne. And we got one more guest here. Anybody know who's here? Anybody recognize the voice?
Hi. I'm David.
Hey, we got David. Yay. David Vindenstuhl in the studio. We drug him out. He was building something. I don't know. We drug him in here.
It's appropriate. Yeah. He was just hanging around, so we figured that we might as well use him.
Yeah.
It's appropriate for after hours, because normally David is here nights and weekends.
I can attest to that. I think I'm down here at least one day on the weekends, and he is always here.
Yeah, I actually need a day off pretty soon. I've been working ever since I got back. What was that, Wednesday last week?
Yeah, hey, speaking of that, why don't you tell your little story exactly of what happened?
Yeah, so I've been in Sweden, seeing my new house for the first time, day before Christmas, pretty awesome. And so I was traveling back to the United States of America, where landed a free and so on.
America.
And you know, there was the polar vortex, lots of that in the news, and I got to experience that firsthand. We landed in Detroit, and while in Detroit, we couldn't get a terminal to start with. All the planes were, all the wide-body fuselage ports or gates were occupied, so we were on the tarmac for an hour and 20 minutes. Which is not nice in a plane after you've been flying for 8 hours and 50 minutes. Got off, and I already knew I missed my flight because I only had like 2 hours in between. So through custom check, got pulled in there. It was a very fun experience. I had to talk a lot about stuff that I don't want to talk about, and then got sent on, got my bag, got through customs, and no one asked me any questions there, luckily. I always get randomly searched every time I go anywhere. So anyway, finally got to Delta, to a Delta representative after standing in a line for roughly an hour-ish, and they like, this is Tuesday afternoon, night-ish. And they're like, okay, next flight I can put you on is Friday morning.
Oh.
What? No. Okay. So I'm like, I can put you on standby on Thursday if you want to. I'm like, yeah, okay. So I'll just exist here then on the airport in the meanwhile. Can you pay for my hotel? And they're like, nope, it's bad weather, it's not our fault. I'm like, oh, okay. So I posted on Facebook, like, hey, anyone in the area that might happen to drive this way from Detroit to Akron? And
so was that actually you that posted that on Facebook? Because okay, a little insight.
It was Chad's
here.
Idea, though.
Okay, a little insight, though, is we were actually doing our first podcast when we kind of found out about all this.
Yeah, so
the first After Hours podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, so straight after that, I got an email, text message, like, hang on, we're picking you up. So Chris and Wayne jumped in a car and drove 4 hours in the really bad weather, and they made really good time. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. We're going up there, going out to
Turnpike, everything was good.
But boy, once we turned north and we started coming up through Toledo, man, there was, I'm looking at the roads and I ask Chris, I go, dude, they use brine up here? The roads are all wet. And all of a sudden, I felt my truck sliding. It wasn't brine. It wasn't wet. It was pure ice.
Yeah, it was pure ice. Was it 75 South was a complete parking lot. We were taking back roads on the way back, trying to figure out how to get back to the turnpike.
Yeah. This was a couple of weeks ago. For those of you who live on the east coast of the States, you guys know, but we had like world record-setting low temperatures. It was like negative 20 degrees Fahrenheit, and even worse with the wind chill. It was super, super cold, and that was like right towards the end of it. But I remember that was why David's flight was delayed to begin with.
Yeah,
right?
they
it was just too cold.
All the small planes, they're like, nope, we'll just we don't feel like it. Airlines, absolutely hate traveling.
Even Delta. It didn't have any flights.
Yep, even Delta.
Now, here's the scary thing, though. You actually had a couple offers, I think, over Facebook to bring you back here or somewhat close. I think there was a Toledo, a Cleveland.
Yeah.
Now, do you think you would have actually jumped in the car with somebody?
At that point, yeah.
Yeah?
Anyone. If they had an axe in the back or like a, it didn't matter. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I can sleep on that. I was so dead tired because I couldn't sleep too good on the plane or anything.
We got out of the podcast and I told Wayne, I said, Wayne, I've been stuck all over the country before, sometimes for 3 days. I know what it's like. I said, so, you know, hey, if it's up to you, if you want to go, Wayne says, hey, man, let's go. You know, so away we went. But
I'm so grateful that you guys showed up. It was so nice. And I don't know how good my company was in the car. I tried to talk, but I can't remember a word I said.
You know what? I'll give you credit because you said you were up and out like for 30 hours. And I told Wayne, I said, he's going to get in the car, say hi. Crash out, and we ain't gonna. I think you talked all the way home.
Yeah, I tried to, but I micro-sleeped in between, so I missed a lot of conversation.
I was really surprised when we did that first stop there at the gas station on the way back. And I looked at you and I thought, there is no way this guy's gonna be awake when we come back. And sure enough, he started talking.
Yeah, no, that was great. I'm so grateful.
We're just glad to have you back. Yeah.
So what's the first topic then of your excellent podcast?
Well, I got a few things here, but let's kind of start off. We're in the midst of winter, in this nasty winter. So we got a lot of indoor flying here going on. So I want to talk a little bit about these micro quads and stuff and these micro helis that some of these companies got, you know, coming out. It seems like every 6 months, like the technology just gets a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And I remember it was probably been, 4 or 5 years ago when they came out. Do you remember the little Pico micro helicopters that come out? Like I was buying them at Radio Shack.
The Pico Z?
Yeah, the Pico Zs. They were originally made by Silverlit.
Yeah.
And then I think Air Hogs took them over.
Yep.
But I was going to like Radio Shack and I was buying like 3-4 at a time. I'd fly them till they were junk. And I'd go buy 3 or 4 more. And then we started modifying them. And that's, you know, wintertime, that was my indoor fun because that was way before they had any kind of micro helicopters, micro planes, you know, unless you built a stick and tissue or something.
Yeah. It was great because that's one of the reasons I got back in the hobby was me and my friend flew that at work. And we had the closed off area that we could fly at. And we would just go out and do combat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It was just all you could do with it was up and down and rudder.
Right. Was it left that they would go? Left or right? One of the directions. Like you said, up, down, it would either turn left or right. There was no left and right.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I could get a week out of them, sometimes 2 weeks. Sometimes you'd buy them and they wouldn't fly at all, like right out of the box.
Oh, really?
Just pieces of junk. But I guess, what were they, $20 here? So
yeah, imagine now, today, the Nano QX, for instance.
Oh, that,
like, oh dude.
Yeah.
Light years and technology difference.
That episode, the Nano Challenge, just came out today, right? I guess it'll be a week ago, at the 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I guess, today.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were flying that indoors. And, man, I But still, we've been talking about it on the other podcast. And, I mean, it's like the best piece of gear for that price I've ever bought.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, after the Pico stuff, there was a time where Wakira was making some micro helis that you could buy out of China. I don't know if you remember. They were fixed pitch.
Yeah.
Really unstable, really hard to fly, came with their own transmitter. But I would just sit in my living room for hours. And, like, for me, just to get up in a hover and kind of sit there and go around a small circle, that was a huge accomplishment with that.
I had even a knockoff of that. It was called the Aero something. I have it on my blog. I remember it. But, yeah, it was the knockoff of the Volcara. So it was pretty bad.
Right,
it barely flew.
And now, like, I was on one of the forums just browsing around, and, like, I think personally here, especially by next year, we're going to see micro quads, FPV, to where you're going to sit in your house and your wife's up laying in bed watching TV, and you're going to be able to move up the steps in, see what's going on, look around. I think that's really possible.
A couple years. I think so.
You think a couple years?
No, I think it's
possible. I think by next...
Well, they already have camera quads.
Sure.
Yeah, and they have small ones.
FPV is going to be a little bit of a...
I've seen it put on the Nano QX. I mean, there is technology small enough.
Yeah, and I don't doubt it.
It's coming.
There is a company that sells the Nano FPV gear. It's really expensive.
There's a couple of places. Readymade RC has it, and Hobby King sells a 1.2 gigahertz 100 milliwatt TX and RX system that's tiny, absolutely tiny.
I saw a video on Readymade's Facebook, and they were, I don't know what they were flying, but they were zipping something around through their office. They had some kind of micro FPV set up, and they were flying through their office.
I think they flew a micro...
Mini Vapor,
yeah.
With FPV?
Oh, yeah. You've got to be kidding me.
Like, how fun would that be?
Oh, that would just be the best. Oh, I love it. Yeah. That brings me up to a couple things I have with flying the micros. I don't know if it's just me. David, before we get there, I have one other thing. I ran into a guy on the forums. He runs Rams Innovations, and he's making a new micro quad out that's, I'd say, close to the Nano QX. The cool thing about it is he's making all the arms foldable. And it was so small, you literally fold it up and stick it in your pocket. And the ingenious idea is how it works with magnets. You just pull the arms out, and they click with a magnet. And they stay there, and if you hit a wall or hit the ground hard, they fold right up, and it doesn't do any damage. Not only that, he was setting it up for FPV gear. Already had the camera and everything set up on it, and he was working on trying to get the FPV gear on it and actually
working.
That's
pretty cool. Who's it?
It's called Rams, RAMZ, Innovations.
Cool.
So I think
to check that out.
I think that's going to be something pretty
cool.
Maybe
link it up in the show notes.
That is awesome. I mean, even though a small quad like that, it doesn't need to be foldable, but it's pretty cool for taking hits.
Yeah, that, and I don't know. You could, like, especially if I hear a lot of people. I got a lot of friends that are still in the airline industry. You know, they're always like, you know, what can I take, or what can I put in my bag to go fly? You get something like that, you can stuff two of them in a suitcase so easy.
Yeah.
You can fly, fly around your hotel room if the weather's bad. I think that's
just... My dad just got a Nano
for
on the road because he flies for a living.
Nice.
And it's one of the smallest out right now. The Proto X is pretty small, but the Nano flies a little bit better, I think.
Tons better because that control, I think you can bind it up to a different controller, though, but the Proto X.
Yeah, the Hubson.
Well. Yeah, something.
Yes, but the Hubson controller,
I think it's going to be a ton easier because the sticks are so tight. That controller is super tight.
And that thing
is cartoonishly
small.
It's
so fast, though.
It is.
Man.
It gets going.
Yeah, Chris has that thing, and I'm sitting there with these big old hands trying to control that little controller. It's like, that wasn't cutting.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
It's hard.
So that brings me up to, David, maybe you can kind of figure this out. I don't know what it is. Now, I haven't noticed it flying planes, but I notice it a lot with any of the quadcopters or tricopters or a lot with the micro. I'm 10 times better flying left. And then when I turn around and I try to go right, it takes me like 4 or 5 circles before I get it down. Does anybody else have that problem? Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, I think that happens. I used to be that way. I still kind of am with multi-rotors, but I'm getting better. Yeah. I've learned to only fly figure eights. But then I got to the point where I flew figure eights so much that I had trouble remembering how to fly in a circle.
Oh, yeah.
No, it's definitely muscle memory where I tend to like doing pirouettes where I push my thumb to the right because it feels more natural than putting it to the left on the yaw. So I usually do my pirouettes one way rather than the other. I still do it, and I catch myself doing it more one way, so I have to force myself doing it another
way. I'm in the house going left. Wait a minute. Might I better go right for a little while?
We'll call it the NASCAR syndrome.
Yeah. There you go. So I just couldn't figure that out, or if it was just me
It all comes down to just training. Just do what you're not comfortable doing, and you get good at it.
So that brings me up to something else that I've been running into. I don't know if anybody else has, but I've got to the point where even with the planes, especially with the quads, I'm at a limit. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how to really say this. Like, I can do a little bit of 3D inverted, you know, and I've got on the simulator and stuff, but I'm at a comfortable limit, like what I really enjoy and how I want to fly. And I'm having trouble stepping up over that limit. Now, Wayne, you're definitely not a beginner, but you are a little bit newer to the bigger planes and stuff.
Right.
Do you find that at all
Oh, yeah. It's all in comfort.
How to get over that hump.
Yeah. I still haven't, so I can't help you.
No?
No, I think everyone gets there. It's comfortable because, doing figure eights up inverted with a plane is on my limits of what I normally pull out. And I can't do... rolling circles.
Right.
Those are tough. Those are really tough. Depends on the plane season.
Right.
Because it's all about timing. But it's funny. We're at Flight Test. We're not the best flying people. We're just people that enjoy it really much and can translate that into video. So
yeah, hence the reason you rarely see very many helicopter videos, specifically 3D helicopter, 3D aerobatics in general. It's not that we don't appreciate or enjoy that kind of stuff. We just can't do it.
Very true. I can do a little bit of it, but on the other hand, I don't like dying.
Yeah.
Because every time I go out, there's something with those helicopters. They're just after me. So I like my quads.
Yeah, the helicopters are scary.
Even Horizon sent us that little new UMX Yak.
Right.
It's a little mini Carbon Z Yak.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It looks awesome.
It looks awesome, and we were like, we should do a review on this, but we're like, wait a minute.
Flies great forward.
Flies great in a circle, yeah. So,
yeah,
and that's one of the things I think you're going to see changing as far as the format of Flight Test in the future is we want to get the community involved even more so than they already are.
Get the good flyers out.
Specifically within the episodes. We don't know the details exactly yet, but that is one thing we're looking to explore is involving the community, kind of like Top Gear. Hopefully, I mean, it's a long shot way down the road, but eventually it would be awesome to have a live studio audience, you know, and say, hey, who wants to try this plane? What do you think? And get a live, review of somebody who's new to it right away, right there.
So. Right. That would be cool.
And I think for the beginners too, like I've watched you progress tremendously, Alex. I mean, it's just, and I think the newer guys, they do that. They start and then all of a sudden you see this huge jump and they go and go and go. And then like for me, boom, okay, now I'm at this point where I can't get over the hump to really get into other stuff.
I think the problem is what you think is fun. If you have enough fun, you're going to stop there. If there's no driving force anymore. If you have a clear goal that I want to be able to do this for a different reason, you can start progressing again. But I think if you can fly and have a super good time, you're not going to learn anything more.
And I find that with the 3D, like I can do some. There's things I can do better than others. But to keep practicing, that's like I get frustrated and I'm like, forget it. I'm just, you know what I mean? I'm like, I don't want to.
Yeah, and I don't personally, I enjoy flying, and I usually fly on my own most of the time, especially at home. So I don't need to impress anyone. It's different when you fly at a field all the time and you're trying to impress people, or it's like, yeah, you want to show off a little bit.
I totally understand. And that's what we talked about last time with Pat, is I was really in a rut there for a while until I went out and Pat's got this old beat up plane all taped up that he didn't care if he buried it in the ground. I'm like, well, if he don't care, then I don't care either. And that, you know, that I can see that.
It's not even necessarily, I don't think, trying to show off, but just trying to keep up.
Exactly.
You're at a flying field, especially if it's a big one, and there's people flying these huge 75% scale 3D aerobatic planes, and you're flying around like an old fogey.
Yeah.
Just trying to keep up is tough when you really don't have to. I mean, if you can learn how to fly in a circle and that
you're
makes
content
you happy,
with that,
yeah, keep doing it. I kind of can relate to it. I play music and guitar and just music in general. When you learn it, you inevitably learn about what you're interested in. So, say you like blues music and it's all you listen to all the time. More than likely, if you pick up a guitar and start learning, that's going to be the first kind of music you learn.
Sure.
And the only way you can progress onto something else is if you take a genuine interest in jazz or whatever
right.
it may be. So if you're happy with what you're doing, just focus on what you love and you know, don't worry about the other stuff.
Yeah. Now, do you think like the, well, we call it the oh crap switch, you know, that Horizon's got out, you know, if they start putting this on a lot of these small micro 3D planes, these kids coming up or these new people, they're just going to go right over the top, I think, with this stuff. Because you're like, oh, I can do that. Oh crap. Okay, we're good again. I think that could really change.
I think that's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
I really hope that happens.
Yeah, and the kids coming up already.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see a ton of youngins flying and stuff, but the ones you do normally are pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think it's the video, the thumbs, you know. The video.
And I've seen, you know, 6-7-year-old, you know, boys and even girls who had never flown a multi-rotor before or something, and they just pick up the sticks and...
Yeah, they jank on it and they see what the...
what it does, and they instantly adapt and they can fly it, so...
So, my son down at Horizon Indoor never even touched a quad, that quad down there, and he flew that thing all day long down and just picked it up and started cranking around. I'm like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
One battery after another.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's a little bit more approachable, whereas in the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, to learn how to fly a plane, first, obviously, you had to grow up because nobody's going to let some kid fly around a gas-powered built-up plane. And then you had to invest the money and all that stuff. And now you can go buy a, you know, $50 mini quad and bang it around and, you know, give it to your 5-year-old kid and see what they do. And
It doesn't cost as much, and it doesn't really matter anymore, instead of when you spend so much time on it.
Well, you've seen when we were out there flying, we had our kids with us, and I had my granddaughter. And not only did she have my Nano QX and, you know, hovering it around and flying it, next thing you know, she was spot landing this thing. There was a little platform.
Oh, really?
And this thing wasn't even a foot in diameter. And she took it right up there, and she kept trying. I told her, hey, you can do it. Just relax. And next thing you know, boom, she landed that thing right on there. I was like,
Nice. Okay.
Nice. Huh. Hey, you tell that story about the guy down at the Horizon Indoor the simulator.
Yeah. This is one of the things that really pushed me, especially as you're getting older. You know, you see people with, you know, nervous tics and stuff and, you know, mental problems maybe a little bit here and there. But we were down there, and there was this – I went over to the simulator, and this older gentleman picks up the remote, and this guy had a nervous tic like I've never seen. He twitched really bad, and he pulls up a helicopter. And I'm thinking, I love flying helicopters, and, dude, you ain't going to do it, you know. And sure enough, he tried to take off, and he'd twitch, and bang, into the ground. He hit reset. He tried a little bit harder, and he got up a little bit better, and twitched, down it went. But I'll tell you what, within 5 minutes, this guy was sitting there flying this helicopter all over the place. And the nervous twitches that he was doing stopped. And I'm sitting there looking at this thing, and my analytical brain, I'm watching this guy, like, dude, check him out. He is so focused on what he was doing that he overcame this barrier, and his buddies came over, and they're all razzing him, and he's talking to them and flying this thing around, he's not twitching.
That's awesome.
It's like, dude, it's therapy, so get into this thing.
Heck yeah.
Okay, I'm going to throw this out here. What do you guys think, like, some of these AMA – nah, I shouldn't say AMA, but some of these club fields that you go to – you know, we all know some of them, you go in there, they're really strict. And a lot of them have the patterns. Okay, you take off this way or this way, depending on the winds or whatever, and you do the circle pattern around and land, around and land. You think that hurts people, you know, down the road, you know, with trying different things and evolving?
Depends.
I wouldn't say it improves their skill set, but and I see where they're coming from as far as safety and all that.
Sure.
And we definitely appreciate the safety side of things, and we try to keep it safe for the most part. The thing with flying fields is there's normally a lot more people that aren't all in the same group. Normally, at times when we fly on set and stuff, everybody knows what's going on. Everybody's looking at the plane, who's not looking through a camera or whatever, or on camera. So I think that's obviously the main issue there is safety. As far as hurting them down the road, yeah, I think that you're going to be limited.
Sure.
It's kind of like NASCAR syndrome you were talking about earlier.
Right.
And yeah, even at like Neat Fair, we were getting yelled at for going the wrong direction.
And I've flown with people that could really only go like left, and when you turn around, hey, let's go, they were lost. I mean, completely like they didn't know what to do.
I'm just gonna throw something out. If anyone ever flies with me, be prepared to lose your plane. I'm just saying it. Otherwise, don't fly with me, because I'm gonna have fun.
Right.
And fun usually ends in chaos.
That's very true. Very true. And it's like that when we all get together, even after a shoot or something. There's just planes going everywhere, and you never know what's gonna happen.
I'm not trying deliberately to do stuff, but it's fun flying patterns.
Yeah.
And trying to get up and try to do stuff together.
Absolutely.
That's what you. If you can't take losing a plane, you shouldn't be flying around me, at least.
I think my biggest problem with some of those fields, though, is, you know, I've been to a few of them, and there's not one smiling person in the group. You know, you go to these little get-togethers, and all these guys got their planes out, and everybody's sitting in their chairs, and nobody's smiling. It's like, dudes, this is a hobby. This is supposed to be fun. You know? Why isn't anybody smiling?
Yeah. And I don't think that goes for all clubs.
I totally agree.
There are some great clubs out there.
Yeah, and there really are. And just some people that have reached out to me through flight test support, talking through customer service. I've met people, and they've sent me videos and pictures of stuff that goes on at their club. And there's tons of good ones out there.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I haven't found one around here.
Exactly.
There apparently are some really good ones out there. So I wouldn't discourage anybody from checking out what's around them in the local club.
Try it. Can't hurt.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you that story about, you know, getting into RC. I love helicopters, especially the scale helicopters. Not much good at flying them, but I'm learning. But, you know, one day I had my camera, and I found out there's this club up in Medina. They fly gliders. So I thought, I'm going to go find these guys and go see if anybody's flying, maybe take a few pictures. So sure enough, I got up there, and I'm taking pictures of these guys flying around. And this guy comes up to me, and he's talking to me. And the only experience I have at flying airplanes is on the simulator. So he gets me over there, and he's got his glider way up in the air. And he goes, here. And he jams a radio in my hand. I'm like, are you crazy? This guy's got a real nice glider. And so he's talking. He goes, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And next thing you know, okay, well, I'm holding my own. I'm doing all right. And then he walks away. I can see him out the corner of my eye. And I'm sitting there and not breathing. Every muscle in my body stiffened up. And this guy walks away, and he lets me fly around. And I holler at him. Finally, he comes back and brings his plane and landed. Mm-hmm. Then I find out he's the president of the club. But these guys were the exact – they were all about the fun. They were – here's this guy who's just up there talking to these guys, taking pictures. They didn't know me, but man, they jammed that radio in my hand, and boy, they started. They created a monster. That's Chris.
I just want to know if the sticks were shaking as bad that day as they were when you were float flying. That's all I want to know.
Oh no, no, nowhere near.
How's it going with the discus launch glider, by the way? Yeah, Wayne bought my my Predator 2, which was in not the best of conditions.
Hey, for what I do, it's awesome. But, of course, now the weather hasn't been cooperative.
I really like that thing. I mean, we go out and I'd say, okay, Wayne, let me throw. Yeah. So I'd be throwing, he'd be cranking it around. And oh, man, things great.
We're waiting for the weather to get back in so I can start flying it again.
Okay. Yeah. I know this subject we've been talking about, it's kind of a hot topic, but and last podcast we kind of really were touching on some funny, you know, stories and good experiences that we've had. Has anybody had like some bad experiences, you know, out flying, whether it be at a club or just at the park or anything? Anybody? Because I've had quite a few, so I'm just...
Even the bad ones are still great.
Still pretty good?
When you look back at them, it's just funny.
It usually turns out funny.
Turns out pretty good.
Except Neat Fair, it was just painful every time you flew.
Uh-huh.
Like, you got... it wasn't fun. I didn't want to fly because every time you went out, someone yelled at you.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you're having fun wrong. I'm like, but, okay. So that's like the, I don't know. I might get some ideas when someone else starts talking.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you one that really kind of bothered me is this is, I would say right after flight test started. It was the spring afterwards. And I went down to Florida. I was down there. I had to do some supercross racing, and I stayed a week down there and took some airplanes down. And my stepdad, he wanted to learn how to fly. So we went out and bought him the little Champ. So I got on Google Earth and was looking around. We found a beautiful park right down the road, wide open. So we ventured down there, and I think I had the EPP Angel with me. So we got out, and I got him all going, and we were having a lot of fun. And we looked down over the hill, and we seen like three or four guys flying down there. And we're like, oh, that's great. Let's go down there, and we'll hang out and talk with them, and maybe you can meet them and go flying with them and stuff. And so we went down there, and we got out of the truck. Nobody would say anything to us. They didn't talk to us. Matter of fact, they kind of just ignored us for a little bit. So finally, I went up and introduced myself, and I happened to have a flight test shirt on that day. And the guy, as soon as I went to go up to talk to him, he turned around and goes, you can't fly here.
Oh.
And I'm like, what do you mean? We're at the beautiful park. And he goes, this is a club, and you can't fly here. And I'm like, well, we'll go up over on the hill then, and we'll just do our own thing. He goes, no. We pay a price here at the park with our club, and you can fly here or you can't fly at all. And I was like, where is there a sign here or something? Who says that we can't fly here? So we kind of bickered back and forth about it a little bit. And then this is what really ticks me off was another guy seen that I had a flight test shirt on. And he goes, hey, do you know flight tests? I've seen some of their videos. And I go, well, I hope the guy's out and blah, blah, blah. After that, everything was fine. We stayed there the rest of the day.
No.
And we flew, and everything was peachy.
Right.
Oh, man. That bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
People.
And then, okay, I got another one that just happened to Wayne and I. What was it? Fall. We fly over at Jackson Park all the time. I've been flying there for 8 years. Never hardly ever had a problem there. As a matter of fact, we actually have a lot of people come out and watch us fly now. And there happened to be a baseball game going on that day. And we were going to fly at the baseball field, and I was setting things up and getting the planes out, and the coach showed up. And I go, hey, you guys got a game today? He's like, yeah. And I go, oh, okay, no problem. We'll go down way at the other end. I said, crank around. He goes, oh, I appreciate that. So the game started. Wayne and I, we were chit-chatting. We were bench flying there for a little while. And finally started flying, and I think I had the striker out, and I was making some passes and everything. Well, I think originally what happened was the kids started watching the airplanes.
Instead
of playing baseball. And then we had the beavers out. And, you know, the fly zone beaver, that thing's not going to hurt anybody. And we were way down at the end of the field. We weren't even close to these kids. Well, the parents started getting upset because the kids were watching the airplane. Well, two dads come down, And I was still flying, and I didn't catch it, but a guy came to you first, and I mean, I heard some arguing going on and some yelling, and I've turned around. I'm trying to fly the plane and look at Wayne. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I see this guy. Oh. Pretty soon, this other dad come over, and he's like, if you don't land that plane, I'm going to stomp that plane into the ground. I'm going to take you with it, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, whoa, dude, whoa, whoa. What's the problem? What's going on here? And he's like, you're flying over my son, and you're endangering their lives, and blah, on and on and on. I'm like, dude, we're not even close to your kids. What are you talking about? I go, we're flying a foam airplane here. He, you know.
Wow.
It was just a bad situation. It got down to the point where, you know, he wanted to call the cops. I'm like, look, buddy, call the cops. They come over and watch us all the time. They're not going to do anything. We're not doing anything wrong here. And it got pretty – with me, I wish to this day I would have handled it a little bit different if I could go back. But I was really annoyed with the, you know, him accusing us of endangering their children's lives, you know, when we weren't. And I got into a pretty heated argument where I thought there for a minute there was going to be some fists.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It got that bad. I was getting really upset. And I wish I think – here's what really confused me is once it was done and over with and we realized the fists weren't going to fly and everything, the guy was walking around and he turned around and he smiled and he goes, but I have to admit, that's pretty cool. And he kept on walking. And I was really? Like, are you kidding me? And I think looking back, I could have diffused it and said, hey, buddy, no problem. We'll take a break or whatever. Why don't you come on over? Why don't you check it out? Hey, you want to take the controller? I think I really could have diffused it and maybe turned around the situation, but my emotions got the better of me.
Yeah, that's – you should always try to do that, be an ambassador for the hobby. You never try to make be the better man, bigger person, and just try to get people excited about the hobby and try to turn a bad situation into a good one if you can.
Right. Because I've ran into so many people flying over there that I think we've got, you know, quite a few that we've got into the hobby, like flying the Radians. They've come out, we've handed them the transmitter, and Horizon should give me some kind of discount or a kickback for as many Radians that we've sold over there.
Yeah.
Now we're selling the Nano QX.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez, I think every guy in my neighborhood has bought one.
Yeah, I literally probably know of 15 Nano QX sales.
Yeah,
that I've personally witnessed.
Yeah, unbelievable. So, nice. Anybody else? Guy?
I try to forget. The bad things. I had a pretty fun story though. Another. It could have been bad, I guess. I was sitting out in the middle of the field playing FPV, and I had this T-shirt over my head because I had a pair of goggles that were not light-proof. So I sit there, and I have the transmitter on, transmitter and everything, and I have this thing over my head, and I hear these footsteps behind me, and I'm flying pretty far, and I was like, are you kidnapped? No, I'm actually flying a plane. Can you see it? And you just walked away. I had no idea who it was. I never saw that.
So
person.
You had like a hood on or like a shirt over your head?
Yeah, I had a T-shirt over my head.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
So that was kind of a really weird situation. To this day, I have no idea who that person was.
Wow. You know, I wonder if there's any cases that somebody has seen some guy or person out flying FPV and they're sitting down on the ground or in a chair and they got the goggles on the transmitter and think, oh, terrorist, you know?
Especially now with the news.
That's what I mean. That's got to have, you know, somewhere down the road that's had to have happened.
Yeah,
I fly at a park right next to my house and some people like go on walks up there, and especially when it gets cold, I'll like put my hood up. And then like once I start flying, I like start to my body language. I start to just like slouch, and people must have thought I was either dead or drunk or something.
Yep,
because my head's just down. I'm just slouched over on the bench in a park.
Nice. That guy didn't take his meds. Look at him. He thinks he's doing flying something, and he's all drooping. Oh my gosh, I can only imagine. And that used to be the worst thing too when first starting out. And I was always flying into parks, and it's all you can do to fly, and then you get them two or three, hey, how you doing? You really like that? How's that thing flying? You're like, don't talk to me. You know, you don't want to be an idiot trying to get it down on the ground without destroying it. Wait a minute. I'll talk to you in 5 seconds.
Yeah. But yeah, how high does it fly?
Yeah, exactly. How far? That's funny.
Number one
first question. How far does that thing go? Way farther than you could ever imagine. That's funny.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No.
No? All right. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. I was looking at some of the new – my mind is racing. Is it next week, I think, they got the Nuremberg Toy Fair.
Oh, really?
Right? That's where all the new high-tech toys and RC stuff.
In Germany.
In Germany, correct.
That's nice.
So hopefully we'll see what's coming out. But anyway, I was on the net searching around. They got some pretty cool new stuff coming out. And the first thing that really caught my eye is Evolution. And I think this is a first. I'm not positive, but I think Evolution's coming out with the first gas engine that is electric. Fuel injection. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah.
You seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Is that the one you were talking about, Dave?
Yeah, I was sharing it because we were talking in the car about it.
Yes.
So what's the difference between a fuel injection and a normal carbureted engine?
Well, the thing with fuel injection is a normal one with a carburetor, you generally always have to tune the low end and the high end with the fuel, depending on
tune temp. What?
The fuel mixtures. You have needles in the carburetor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So needles.
So
are...
you generally have like this little slide in there. You want to get in the grate. You're going to confuse everybody,
no,
right?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah,
there are fuel needles in there that distribute the fuel. And generally, you got a low end needle, which from like, say, idle up to a quarter throttle, that would be your low end. And then from a quarter throttle all the way up to full throttle is your high end. Now, depending on altitude, temperature, various
mixture,
yeah, what kind of oil you're using, you have to adjust those. So if you're flying in the summer and it's 90 degrees and you got to go out, you got to tune it a little bit. Now, generally on the gas, if you're flying in the summer, you can kind of set it and leave it. And then in this fall, you might have to adjust it, where like the nitro stuff, you're constantly adjusting them. Then things are a pain in the butt, in my opinion. So with the electronic fuel ignition, you don't have to do anything. It doesn't matter if it's 100 degrees out, minus 30, you're at 10,000 feet. It adjusts that mixture and makes that thing run perfect all the time.
Doesn't it atomize the fuel and mix it with the air?
Yes.
And it's electrically controlled, the mixture,
correct.
Right?
Correct.
So that's the difference.
Right.
So you don't have to do any. It will start every time. It will run the optimal.
Yes. No choke. Generally, there's no chokes. I haven't looked in the detail with it, but like on the motorcycles of fuel injection, there's no more choke, fires right up. Now, I got to wonder down the road, like with the motorcycles, you can buy a small little computer, plug it right into the EFI and change like ignition curves, throttle curves, RPMs,
cool.
You know, for depending on what kind of plane you're flying.
That would be
so
cool.
If you look at that, you could buy one motor, you know, and use it in different planes and adjust. Oh, I think that'd be phenomenal.
Yeah. So the motor is coming out. It's 62cc.
62cc is the first one.
Which
is
a big one.
Yeah, big motor. But this is just the start.
Yeah, I hope it gets smaller.
So my thinking is, okay, I'm sure they're already working on the smaller ones. So my thinking is if they get this down into like the 10cc or the 15cc gas engines now that Evolution has out, where you could put that into a 40-size plane, I think people are going to jump all over this.
I will. Because that's the main reason I absolutely hate fuel combustion, because you have to tune the needles and all that mess and everything. Just it's not takes away the fun for me. Some people like it. It's fine. But I really want something that always works.
Yes.
Anytime.
Right.
Like electric.
Right. I just think it's phenomenal. And I really do. I think, you know, they get this technology down that. Not saying electric's going to go away, but I think the gas market is really going to step it up.
If that happens, heck yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, none of us really fly gas too much, but as you guys know, I was in the fifth scale car a lot, and I can't figure out in the fifth scale car world, we were all about tuning, porting, you know, taking these engines and putting big exhaust on them and, you know, trying to get a smaller motor to get more horsepower and that. But you don't see that in the gas aircraft world of RC. And I don't know why. Anybody, any thoughts on that or have any idea why they don't do that? Do you think it's just a reliability issue?
I think it is.
You think it is?
They're at the peak. The top engines that you buy, they're operating at peak while not exploding.
Right.
And I think that is it. I think some people might still do it. I've seen some people take chainsaw engines because they're pretty underrated at setup, and then bore them out and do all the crazy stuff and fly with them, but they usually explode after a while.
Yeah, that is true. The other thing, anything else on that? No, nothing? No. All right. We're going to go into a little bit of some planes I've seen. Now, I'm not going to jump on Hobby King's bandwagon or anything, but I think this is a really cool idea. Have you guys seen the new Junior that they got coming out? Did you see that?
Yeah.
We saw it at Neat Fair, for real.
Oh, yeah. Just before it came out. Is it the old-timer?
Yes.
It looks like
it's
awesome. Yeah.
It fooled me.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it fooled me on the website. I saw it in real life.
Exactly.
But it fooled me on the website.
Yeah, I glanced at it and I was like, yeah, okay, that's kind of cool. Not realizing that it was foam, because you see it in the pictures and it actually has like the ribs of the balsa in the foam, built into the foam. I'm like, that's pretty cool.
As well as paint. They painted it so it looks like there's light shining through the monocoat.
Right.
You can see the framework, but it's really just a paint scheme and it looks really good.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I want to try it out. Yeah,
absolutely.
I wonder how it flies. Anyone out there that flown it, give us a report. Send an email to Chris.
Yeah.
It looked pretty good at Neat Fair. And that was right before they released the Messerschmitt 110, the ME-110.
Nice.
Which, that thing was really zipping around.
Did you like that?
It was pretty cool looking.
Yeah.
It was fast.
That's on my list. I want a multi-engine plane Warbird this year.
Mm. Nice.
So I think that'd be a good one. It has retracts and everything. So
yeah. It looks nice. It really does. The Durafly line is really a nice line. It's a bit pricier than the other.
It is,
stuff,
but I think the quality's better.
Yeah.
But I think Hobby King's on to something with these, because I'm fascinated by some of this stuff that people flew like in the 60s, with their.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I ain't going to build something like that.
Oh, did you see the old Crow?
Yeah.
The old Crow just came out. No, I haven't seen that.
New P-51.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same as the yellow nose one.
Yes.
Yeah.
They just repainted it.
Right.
Which it looks great.
It looks so much better.
But yeah, the Hobby King, the Durafly is a little bit more expensive than the other Hobby King products. Is that what you meant?
Right.
Because compared to other manufacturers, they're cheaper.
Right.
Yeah, they are.
And they normally have more features like retracts and flaps sometimes and stuff.
Like metal trunnion retracts, nav lights, scales, flaps, that are on the slowdown modules.
Yeah.
I mean, for the money, they're pretty good. And we've flown some of the ones they had out already, like the Corsair, the P-51.
How's the Corsair, by the way? It has to be pretty stally.
It was. Chad will tell you that firsthand. He firewalled it and before the airspeed. It actually has more power really than it should. So he just firewalled it and just pulled up on it, and it started coming up off the ground. It just tip stalled instantly. But other than that, I mean,
it's a Warbird.
Yeah, exactly. It flies like a Warbird.
Not like your Spitfire, David.
No.
Spitfire doesn't fly like a Warbird.
No.
Planes should be immune to tip stalls, I'm just saying.
Right. Hey, David, we were. I was helping you with a project yesterday a little bit. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So today's Monday. So yesterday was Sunday. So we went out to Cracker Barrels in the morning. Sometimes we do that. Get some breakfast. Have a good time. And then after that, we went to the shop to play around a little bit. I needed to get some work done when Chris wanted to edit some podcast. So I'm working on the Viggen, which is coming out Monday when this is out. And I decided to revive an old nemesis of mine, which is the afterburner for an EDF. So it's a really tough project to do. It's a lot of stuff that has to be just right for it to work. And so we were playing around, and Chris was nice enough to help me to tune it. I've redesigned it I added the heat up element behind the efflux ring. So the fuel comes in through a spiral that goes in to where the flame is going to be. So it's going to heat itself once it's started. So you start it at a lower throttle, and then when you increase it, because the... This is
brass tubing, right?
Copper tubing, yeah.
Fuel, okay.
So because the butane, when it comes out, it's so cold when it goes from liquid to gas form, it requires so much energy to change... the different stage between the different stages, like everything,
right?
And the more throttle you give, the harder it's going to compress it, and the more problems you're going to have. So adding that extra thing in the exhaust really helped a lot. And I tried it out, and I even added a choke.
Oh, it was a wheel collar, right?
Yeah, collar on the...
fuel tube.
On the fuel tubing. So I could set the flow rate of the butane and really trim it. Before, I had a tube that I squished with a pair of pliers, and it wasn't very accurate. But I could get it going. Man, that thing is gorgeous when it fires up now. I got a foot-long flame out of it, and it sounds fantastic.
I was like, I don't know, 5 feet behind that thing, and I wanted to watch. Because we did a couple test runs, and I was kind of holding it, and Dave was like, no, you got to come behind this thing. You got to check this out. So I'm all down there, 5 feet back. I thought my eyebrows were going to burn off. I mean, that thing was just unbelievable.
And my GoPro almost caught.
Yeah, he almost melted the GoPro because he had it, 6 inches behind the exhaust. But where did you initially come up with that, or where did you see the workings for that?
The afterburner?
Yeah.
So I had the idea. I wanted to try it a long time ago. So I started doing research. I searched for it. And there is some threads on RC groups and people that have kind of done it. There's one or two people that have successfully done it, but it was a long time ago and wasn't very impressive, and the burn time was really short and it didn't look too cool. So I thought, I can do that better. Like you always think when you see something.
Right.
I could, but I spent, the first time I did it, I spent roughly 2 weeks full-time work trying to get it working, just get it to a stable point. And there's so many things to think about. It is so much harder than I thought, and there's hardly any info on it out there. If you search for thermal jets, there's some information. There were old engines way back before the jet engine, not way back, but a little before the jet engine started coming. They did this thermal jets.
Oh, no kidding.
So the idea is to use an afterburner works by heating the air in the exhaust tube. The air is expanding. Where is it going to go? Backwards. Therefore, it's increasing the thrust and the efflux speed, giving you more speed and more power or more thrust. So that's how thermal jets, and that was the principle of heating the air and driving it. It's the same as a jet engine. That's how they expand. Suck, squeeze, bang, and blow.
That's exactly how it's put.
But an afterburner works by just pumping more fuel in the back, and it's really not the most efficient way of doing it. But it's difficult to explain, but there's so many small things that you don't think about that has to be just right for it to work. And a lot of people think that you have to have all this insulation and all these crazy, because it's going to get hot and that. But figure out after a while, the EDF, the air on the outside, traveling on the outside of the cone, creates a boundary layer, which cools the exhaust pipe. So you don't actually have to use even a metal case. I'm using a normal poster board.
I know. I couldn't believe that.
And it works great.
But it actually kind of works just like a regular, not a jet engine like on a fighter, but like on a regular airliner where they have the high, they call it a high speed. speed bypass fan,
yeah,
where you got the actual certain percentage of air coming on the outside, and then you got the regular small turbine jet on the inside.
Yeah, that's called a turbofan.
Right, exactly.
And the 90% of the thrust comes from the bypass.
Right.
Really does. It's a pretty clever idea.
It is.
And the A10 Warthog uses that, those engines. That's pretty awesome.
Right.
There's so many cool things on YouTube if you search for jet engines and walk around and that. And there's some good information on how stuff works. It's really fascinating to me. It's just like stuff that uses fire and stuff.
Have you guys fired up the pulse jet yet?
No, not yet. Yeah, it's coming.
Is it? You got it's any coming. Ideas? Anything you can tell us, huh?
We're thinking about putting it on a...
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Oh, come on. Wait, let's hear it. Let's hear it.
The first idea was to put it on a small version of the toaster plane.
Toaster plane.
Oh, jeez.
Which is like an inverted gull wing, flying wing design.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really a flying wing because it was elevator.
It had a V-tail on it.
But it wasn't a V. It just was a rudder V-tail.
It was because it didn't work.
It flew really weird, basically.
I loved it. I love the way it fly after we
It flew
it.
Great, but the way that it flew great was really, really weird.
That's hilarious.
So that small thing, it was, Josh was prepping for it, and then we took out the pulse jet, and I'm like, Alex, like, it's never going to work.
It's going to rip it apart.
Yeah, it really is.
Well, how many pounds of thrust was it?
6 pounds of thrust in that thing. And we're like, oh, wait, how much is 6 pounds? Because I don't think in pounds in that. So I'm like, wait, that's actually more thrust than the DT-750 is running 12-inch props on your on your Kraken.
So, yeah.
So I'm like,
So maybe we'll do it on the full scale.
Yeah,
or not the full scale, but the full scale toaster plane.
Yeah, or the just a Kraken again.
Kraken would be good. Yeah. Probably a wiser choice.
Yes, to start out with at least, to know that it works. Just getting it going. Problem is, gasoline and foam
board
doesn't mix too good.
Right.
So I hope it's going to be a good fast flight before it disintegrates.
So it's kind of going to be like the rocket plane, but in a large scale.
Yeah. Oh, they sound so fantastic.
So what's the difference between a normal jet and like a pulse jet, if anybody doesn't know?
The pulse jet is a really old idea. And what it is a tuned pipe. All it is a pipe that is done to a very specific measurements. And there's only one moving part, and it's called a butterfly valve. It more or less it has pedals. It's a circle that has cutouts that looks like
pedals. Yeah.
Reed pedals, yep. Yes. So in the front, what it does, it sucks in fuel, and it mixes with air, comes into the main chamber, which is a certain size, and then it tapers off into a really long tube. And what it does, it sucks in this fuel, and now I'm describing how the motor works when it's actually already going. So when it sucks in, the outside case is so hot that it ignites the fuel when it gets to the perfect mixture. And when it does ignite, it shoots out the back, sucks in more fuel in the front because it's creating a vacuum through the reed valve. So getting more fuel, igniting that because the tube is so hot, and that's how it goes. And it does this depending on the pulse jet, it does this between 50 and 1,000 times a second. So it sounds insane. There is no throttle management.
Yeah, it's on or off.
On or off. It's kind of hard to start.
It instantly gets like the metal heats up so fast that within like 3 seconds it's white hot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And the AMA says it's an incendiary device and you're not allowed to fly it. So that's going to be awesome. We have to do that on our own field, not an AMA field.
The Germans used it in World War II on
the buzz bomb.
The V1, yeah. It was basically the first guided, it was a rocket, but or a pulse jet, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
So, yeah, look that up. Also, if you're interested in checking out pulse jet stuff, there's a guy on YouTube named Colin Furs, and he's definitely unsafe and is not a good example, but it's definitely entertaining. He does crazy stuff with pulse jets and science in general.
Yeah,
attaches it
crazy.
To a bike. He rides a bike with a pulse jet on it.
You gotta be kidding me.
He uses it to blow snow off his driveway, and it's like blowing chunks in the driveway, and there's cement flying everywhere.
It is so ridiculously loud.
Yeah, the sound is the thing. Yeah, it's crazy.
It sounds like nothing else. Look it up on YouTube. It will not do it justice. It sounds so weird.
Because it peaks the whatever microphone is recording. Just, yeah. You can't hear anything.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It's going to be a pretty awesome episode, I think.
So not to change the subject, but to go back to the Afterburner, if you guys are interested in checking out some of the test runs that we did and also just some behind-the-scenes stuff on flight test in general and specifically the Viggen, check us out on Vine. It's just at flight test.
Right. Yeah, we have been leaking some stuff on the Vine account because there's not a lot of people there. So they deserve to get some special treatment.
Ooh, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, I just posted some stuff today.
Huh.
Yeah, we did some... the Viggen has been in the works for quite a while. You built one.
Yes, I did.
A 64-millimeter UDF in it.
Yes.
Still haven't flown it, though.
No, but... I
flew one of mine, though.
Yes, and I think down the road we're going to be stepping it up to the 70-millimeter. And do you think we get a 90 in there?
I think you have to blow it up a little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. A 90 or 120 in a 200 or 300% version would be nice.
Holy cow.
That would be sweet. You want to build one, Wayne?
Yes.
I have a kit cut if you want one.
Oh, take it home.
Yeah.
Come on over and we'll get out the hot glue gun.
Yeah, you already built one because there's new techniques to it. Yeah. So it's really people need to watch the video. Don't just assume that you can do stuff. It's a specific order for things.
Yep.
It's a whole new level.
Yeah, a whole new level.
Yeah. The other last thing here, we're going to wrap up here soon. I think we're over an hour and we don't want to bore you too bad, but we're still kicking it around. You know, we've talked amongst us and talked to Chad. I think we're going to, if you guys want something like this, is to get some planes in, or maybe if you guys send us an email or something on Twitter or something maybe you want to see or hear about plane, quadcopter, or anything.
Review?
Yeah. We've been kicking around the idea, you know, getting something in that the people want to see, take it out, pass the transmitter around, Alex fly it for a while, wait, and then, you know, get our opinions on it. So you're not just getting like one person or whatever. Alex might see something that he really likes and doesn't like, and then I might see something I like and dislike, and same thing with Wayne, and you're going to get, you know, more than a one person perspective on it. What do you guys think about that?
Sounds pretty awesome.
Does that sound pretty good?
Is it going to be video or audio?
Well, we're going to shoot video too, I believe. And then we're going to run the audio in here. And if it works good enough, I think we might link up the audio and the video on the YouTube, correct?
Oh, cool.
Possibly.
Yeah.
So, that sounds awesome. Okay. I think that's a really good
idea.
Because in a podcast, you have to explain more with words.
Right. A little more detailed.
Yeah. Which is, I think that's not a bad idea. I think it's a different
type
of, because, I mean, there's a lot of videos. There are not a lot of podcasts that
do
that.
And I think, too, I was thinking the other day is if somebody says, hey, I'd like you guys to test this airplane. But this is what I want to know about it, like whether it be flight characteristics or what, you know, battery size or whatever. So we can also kind of answer their question. You know, maybe if it's a specific question, we can kind of answer that also in the podcast.
Yeah. So I think that's a really good idea. Yeah, send Chris an email about that.
Chris at flighttest.com.
Yep.
So what do you guys think? You want to wrap it up?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. All right. Hey, guys, we really appreciate it. We hope you enjoy it. If you do, please, what is it, like us or whatever on iTunes? What is it, Alex?
Rate us
on iTunes. Yes. Like us on Facebook.
There we go.
Follow us on Twitter.
Get that stuff all confused.
Subscribe on YouTube.
There you go. There you go. And if you do like and everything, and we'll keep this thing going. We're having a lot of fun with it. But again, if you have, we'll take any kind of comments, whatever you like. Hit me up on Twitter. We're at FT After Hours. on Twitter, and you can email me at chris@flighttest.com. If you have anything for Wayne, it's wayne@flighttest.com. And we hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Thank you, guys.